Guardians, Crystal Keepers, Gym Lovers, and Rock Hounds. Welcome to There's a Rock for That. This is the show that is all about crystals, gems, and rocks of all varieties, where we will explore the folklore, metaphysical properties, and healing applications of the stone people. I'm Pterodactyl, and I welcome all of you, whether you're here to connect with the Crystal Kingdom or discover what your rocks are about, or even sail the mystic seas to the land of dragons where fairies greet us and unicorns gallop through magical forests to sacred stone temples. I'm so happy that you are here to share the experience today. And today, I think, will be quite a fun show. We are going to be talking about pendulums. This is a topic that, you know, we've mentioned a little bit here and there about pendulums, and but we haven't really explored the topic in depth, so I think that that would be fun to do today. And also, after that, in the second part of the show, we are going to talk about our featured stone or our crystal guest today, which are tektites. And I'm excited to talk about those. You know, it's funny. I was really thrilled last weekend. I think it was last weekend, last Friday. Renee Cummins, who used to host and sometimes still does special episodes of You Predict, which is a very fun and fantastic show here on the Attuned Magazine Radio Network. She happened to be on a road trip and came through town, and I got to have, my husband and I had dinner with her and her husband, and we were, you know, of course, we're talking about stones, and she brought me these just beautiful specimens of Arkansas quartz that she got on her trip that are just lovely and really, really, you know, fresh out of the earth, just beautiful, beautiful. And she, as we're talking, I'm sitting there, and I noticed this beautiful necklace that she was wearing that she made herself. She's a woman of many talents. As if you know her and if you've seen her postings on either Google Plus or on Facebook, you've seen the wonderful examples of her artwork that she does. Well, she also has made jewelry, and I think she makes wands, too. We want to try and have her back on the show maybe to talk about making wands with crystals. But this necklace she was wearing really caught my eye. It was so unusual and really just, you know, stunning. And it had a piece of tektite on it, which I don't really see people wear tektite very often. I guess I could say I see very few people that wear it. The ones that I see that wear it often. So we had a little conversation about tektite, and that got me thinking that's something that we haven't, a stone we haven't featured yet. So we'll be talking about later on. But let's go ahead and start talking about using and choosing a pendulum. Because that's something that I get a lot of questions from people about. And the first thing that comes up with that is about choosing it. You know, well, how do I know I picked the right one? Or how do I know I'm picking one that is going to work for me? And, you know, it's really kind of, I think sometimes it's one of those things that we kind of overlook. You know, or overthink rather, you know, and we overlook the simplicity of it. You know, if you're buying in person, you know, like at a shop, you want to make sure that, you know, you hold it. Ask if you can hold it or if it's laying out, you know, hold it and just see if you can, you know, get any sort of sense from its energy. See it, you know, look for that connection, you know, and trust your feelings. Always trust your feelings. Now, if you're buying online, and when I had Jason Spillman on the show, what was that, last week, I think? I shared, you know, a story about, you know, buying a very special pendulum online and kind of the unique experience of that. And you can listen to that show. You can find it in the archives on theresarockforthat.com if you want to hear that story. I won't go into it since I already shared it. But one number one thing I would say when you're buying online is trust your feelings and your instincts. Look at the pictures. See if you have any sort of feeling or reaction to it, you know, go with what resonates with you. And, you know, what is a pendulum? You know, other people have asked me about, you know, well, does it matter what the shape is or the size of it? Look, a pendulum is any weight on a string, right? And a string can be a cord, it can be a chain, etc. You know, and it could be a heavier thing. You could tie a rock to a string and use it as a pendulum. You can make your own pendulums very, very easily. You know, it's just got a length of string and a little, you know, kind of bobble at the end. Personally, I do like to work with crystal pendulums in particular. And I don't know if you can see it. I was having problems for the last couple of days trying to put the show together. So the slideshow especially was giving me a lot of problems. So I don't know if you can see the slideshow, but definitely on social media I posted photos, and it should be in the slideshow, of some of the pendulums that I have. And if you notice, there's a little bit of a variety there. I've got a clear quartz one, and I've got a little amethyst one. I've got an aragonite one. I've got a sodalite one, a rainbow fluorite one, a turquoise one. So there's a wide variety of different kinds of crystal pendulums that you can find, and they're all useful. It really depends on what connects to you. One of my favorite is not necessarily the most popular kind, and that is a halite pendulum that I really like working with, and I have a turquoise one that I really enjoy. I enjoy them all. And one of the things that comes up when you talk about using pendulums and the use of a pendulum to answer a question or to find something like a lost item or to find water or, you know, anything basically, is called dowsing. Okay, and dowsing is done with a pendulum, or it can be done with what they call dowsing rods, two rods, one that you hold in each hand, or one singular rod that's called a Y rod that has two little prongs sticking out of it. Or you can also do body dowsing, which we talked about back when we had Dr. Uwe Albrecht on the show. And again, that's another one. You can find an archive on theresarockforthat.com. That was a great episode. But basically, you know, pendulums are wonderful for answering those yes-no questions. A lot of times, you know, we have questions that we form in terms of being a yes or no, and a yes or a no is the kind of answer that we want. And I know as a tarot reader and an angel card reader, oftentimes people will want a reading where they just want to ask a series of yes-no questions. And truly, you know, the tarot is, in particular, isn't designed for, you know, it's really a method that gives a lot of information and a lot of nuances, but isn't really designed to answer yes-no questions. Now, of course, you can do a yes-no spread, and a lot of people have success with that and enjoy using that kind of spread. But really, if you're looking to get a reading or even just for yourself, you know, a yes-no answer, a pendulum is probably your best tool for that, okay? And the other thing that comes up when we talk about pendulums, you know, is the what's moving it, you know, what's controlling it, what's controlling the pendulum, what's moving it. You watch a dowser and you're like, ah, I saw your hand move, or I could have sworn, you know, I couldn't tell really, but I think your wrist may have moved. And chances are very good that you did, if that's what you feel you detected, you probably did see that. And guess what? That's okay. It's totally okay. In fact, that's sort of how it works. You know, so what is real, and I'll explain that in a minute, you know, what is really at work when we're dowsing with the pendulum? You know, for some people, they feel that spirit moves the pendulum, or the angels, or the fairies, or the whatever their belief system that they have tied to the use of their particular pendulum, their methodology, you know, that's their answer for it. And, you know, that's fine. If you've reached that answer and reached that conclusion and you feel strongly about it, that's you, that's good, that's fine, you know, because it almost doesn't matter. You know, what you believe is really causing it. You know, is it you know, tapping into the great, you know, collective consciousness, maybe, you know, are spirit guides involved, maybe, who knows, you know. There are some things that we do know. We do know that the body is involved, okay. Obviously, you're holding the pendulum, right? So already the body's engaged, you know. And you try to, you know, have your arm, you know, as stationary as possible so you're not consciously moving it, and that's fine. You know, when we talk about the movement of it, okay, there's been some interesting, you know, experiments done with that. You know, the actual dowsing instrument pendulum, you know, I think the pendulum is a tool. I think the actual instrument is the human body. And, you know, one of the reasons that I do believe that is because there's people that don't use a tool like a pendulum or a rod or anything, that they successfully douse just using their body through arm movements, through arm length test, like with the InnerWise system that Dr. Uwe Albrecht came up with, you know, in the, but some of these interesting experiments that have been done with it are very interesting, you know. In the 1970s, a Czech scientist, psychologist, and inventor, Jan Murta, who's a PhD, undertook research into the movement of dowsing rods. And you know, from the knowledge gained in his experimental work at McGill University in Montreal, Dr. Murta suspected that the movement of the dowsing device had to be directly connected to muscular contractions in the body, specifically in the arms and hands of a dowser. He therefore reasoned that if he could build an apparatus that could simultaneously record both the movement of the dowsing device and any muscular contraction, he would be able and unambiguously to determine which came first, the muscle movement or the dowsing device movement. And so Dr. Murta constructed a measuring instrument called an accelerometer, which when attached to a pocket-sized Y rod held in his hands in the dowsing mode, could record the rod's every movement through an extremely sensitive built-in crystal, see, including movements so slight or minimal that observers, unable to measure or detect them visually, the rod was motionless. When the rod was under tension and moving in the hands of the dowser, its imperceptible movement was recorded on a strip chart as a wiggly line. When it lay still on the table, the record on the chart flattened out into a perfectly straight line. So this is clear proof to Jan, Dr. Murta, that the dowser's muscular contraction could move the rod even before he went searching for a target. In a further test, Dr. Murta electrically wired the flexor carpi radialis muscle in the wrist area of the forearm to his apparatus. Both the movement of the rod and the contraction of the muscle were then recorded on the chart. When the dowser was exposed to a dowsing stimulus, from this he was able to determine the interval between the muscle's contraction and the subsequent movement of the dowsing rod. And it was approximately half a second between when the muscle contracted and the rod moved. I mean, a half second. You know, another person, William Tiller, who's a professor emeritus at Stanford University, later confirmed Dr. Murta's finding in his own experiment. And he describes this securing a dowsing rod in a fixed vise with the fingers of the dowser wrapped around the handle. And when exposed to dowsing stimuli, no movement of the rod was observed. When the vise, still holding the rod, was detached from the workbench and placed on a supportive surface again with the dowser's fingers on the handle, a dowsing movement started to build up. So, you know, Christopher Bird, who was recording these different experiments, concludes that Dr. Murta believes he has unquestionably proven that dowsing devices react only after human beings operating them pick up a signal which stimulates a physiological reaction. Okay. So basically, what this says is, if you're dousing and someone accuses you and says, "I saw your hands move," and you can say, "Yes, of course you did," because the prompt, however, is as to which direction the tool moves in, as it, because it's a kind of a completely separate issue of what the answer is compared to what's making it move. So yes, your hand, your muscle contractions are making it move. Your muscle contracts a half second before the rod or the pendulum moves. So something to think about, so we can't deny the fact that the body has an influence on it. Okay? Now, the answers that we come up with when we're dowsing, it really is a separate issue, because that's something that, movement is one thing, and with dowsing rods, which is what these experiments were done with, they're just looking for movement of the rod. With a pendulum, maybe it's a little bit different because you have different, specific ways in which it's going to move. And that's one of the first things you're going to do when you acquire your pendulum, is you're going to determine how it, I'm going to say how it talks to you. Like I said, this is great for yes, no answers. So what is its movement for yes, and what is its movement for me? 9 times out of 10, now I have one or two pendulums that move a little bit differently, but 9 times out of 10, its yes is done in a circle, in a clockwise circle. And its no is done in a straight up and down line. Okay? For other people, the movement's different. Their yes and their no are different. And how do you determine that? How do you find out? Well, you ask it, So the important thing, I think, is like kind of to sort of like set the space, right, to work with your pendulum. So one thing that I always recommend is that you want to keep your arm stabilized, put it on a desk or hold it straight down, either way, whatever more comfortable, because the key to it is that you want to be relaxed. You don't want to work with a pendulum with a lot of anxiety, and that's also why I recommend that if you are dousing on a personal question for yourself that you have a lot of anxiety about, or you're really, really attached to the outcome, you might have somebody else douse for you, because that nervous energy in your body is definitely going to cause maybe an excess of energy and an excess of movement. Okay, and that's the thing about dowsing, is you want to do it when you're relaxed. You want to have your arm and your hand stabilized so it's not flopping around or, moving a lot. At the same time, you don't want to have a lot of tension. You don't want to hold it very tensely. You just want to kind of relax your hand, And another thing that I recommend before you start dowsing is that you take at least 3 deep breaths. Just, sit there kind of in and out. You can breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. Whatever, helps you feel that your body is becoming relaxed, And a lot of times people, will want to say something, to the pendulum to kind of set the stage. It can be an elaborate ritual if that's what you feel comfortable with, if that's what kind of gets you in the zone. It doesn't have to be a ritual at all. Some people, one thing that is kind of nice to say before you start dowsing is, "I ask that this pendulum relay answers from my higher self or spirit at all times unless I request otherwise. I also ask that all information be in truth and accuracy and 100% aligned with my highest good and the highest good of all." That's a nice thing to say. You can tweak that and say it in a way that's meaningful for you and gives you that certain feeling like, okay, I'm ready, because that's really what it's about. Understand that for some people, dowsing is a very spiritual thing. It's a spiritual experience for them. They look at it as a spiritual tool, their pendulum. And then for other people, they don't feel that way at all about it. You know, they don't make any connection to spirit or to their higher self or to the collective consciousness or to God or whatever. You know, they don't make any of those connections. To them, it's like kind of just a practical thing that they do that works. And that's the key. It works regardless of what you attach to it or don't attach to it. Okay, so, you know, you can make it as much of a spiritual experience as you want, but at the same time, there's other people that douse, and it's not any of that for them. And, you know, and that's the thing I think is kind of important to kind of keep in mind. Because, you know, historically, you know, working with a pendulum, dowsing, those kind of things, you know, they have been associated with the paranormal or the occult or, you know, all these different things, you know, that have had, you know, kind of, become like kind of a negative stereotype when it comes to working with a pendulum. And most of that is fear-based, because here we have something that works and we don't understand the way that it works, and people are, you know, have that fear of the unknown. So, you know, understand you don't have to join a coven or anything to be a successful dowser, okay? You know, because it doesn't have to have anything to do with that. And for some people, it has a lot to do with it. And, you know, both ways, it's all right. So, you know, determining your pendulum's yes, no. Okay, let's talk about that. So we're going to take our deep breaths. We're going to relax our body, you know, have our arm, you know, stable but relaxed. I'm going to hold the pendulum out, and I've heard of different ways of holding it. That's another thing that I've gotten a few questions about, is like, what's the right way to hold the pendulum? Well, the right way is in a way that it's not moving or it's not tilted, that it's kind of, you know, balanced, direct, hanging down, you know, on its own when you're not asking a question of it. And some people like to hold it the very end of the string or the chain or the cord between their thumb and forefinger. And then I've seen other people that will, if they've got a particularly long chain or string, they will kind of weave it in between their fingers and kind of have the string kind of weaved in between the fingers going across the hand, because they feel that makes it more stable. You know, whatever's going to feel comfortable for you. And these, you know, pendulums come in all different lengths, you know, of string, cord, chain, whatever it's hanging off of. You know, whatever feels comfortable, whatever you feel is like, okay, you know, this is the way that I can hold it, that I feel like, you know, my arm isn't shaking, my hand's not shaking, so I don't have excess movement. The pendulum is pretty steady when I'm not asking it a question or anything. So whatever, you get into that comfortable thing, you are relaxed as you can be. You are not, you know, feeling any sort of like, you know, anxiety or anything. And so you're holding your pendulum, and you calmly can ask it, show me your movement for yes, and just, you know, say that, and you can wait, and you can see, like, you know, how does the pendulum move?
So anyways, you know, you ask it to show you the movement for yes, ask it to show you the movement for no, and either way, you know, pay attention to the which way it moves. Does it move in a clockwise circle direction? Does it move in a straight up in line or straight horizontal line, you know, either vertically or horizontally, when you ask those questions? And you can further test this. Another way to do it, instead of saying show me your answer for yes or showing me your answer for no, is you can ask a question that you do already know the answer to. You know, is my name, you know, whatever your name is, you know, ask a question that you know that is true, ask a question that you know the answer is false, and see how the pendulum moves and answers back. Okay. And then, you know, by doing that and working with it, you are going to determine, like, what the movement is. Now, that is, once you do that, then the world's, like, kind of wide open for you to ask any type, sort of yes, no question that you want. Now, the one thing to kind of keep in mind with pendulums, with any form of divination, is that you never want to get to the point where you are relying on divining the answers instead of living your life. Okay. There's a lot of people that kind of, you know, it can be kind of a fine line. And I know it's kind of a weird thing to mention, you know, but I feel like it's important to know, because it's like we have to make our decisions for ourselves, right? You know, we have to remember that, you know, we have to live this life. We can do all the readings that we want on something when we have especially a difficult decision to make. We can do all the readings in the world that we want, but sometimes, you know, even with a pendulum where you can ask those yes, no questions, sometimes, you know, the answers aren't going to be very clear. So what happens when you're dowsing and the answer that you get isn't very clear? Well, a lot of times, once you've determined your yes or no movement, it will maybe not move at all if the answer isn't clear or it's not something, you know, that's kind of been, you know, I don't want to say predetermined. I don't mean predetermined. But, you know, if there's a lot of, you know, look, we like to say, you know, the future's not set in stone. And regardless what kind of divination is being done or what kind of reading that you're either doing or that you're receiving, you have to understand, you know, there's chaos in the world, right? There's a lot of things that, you know, come up, accidents happen, you know, all kinds of things. It's like there's this big, messy soup out there. And using a pendulum or using any divination method, you know, can definitely clue us into what the probabilities of something happening are. Sometimes, you know, everything lines up perfectly and we get these clear-cut answers. We find out something's going to happen on a certain date and boy, howdy, it happens exactly like it was predicted. And then other times, the answer isn't so clear. And so with a pendulum, when an answer isn't so clear with a pendulum, you know, you're going to get this kind of weird sort of, you know, either a non-response or it might move in a different way. And that's something else that you can determine, too, when you're learning the movements of your pendulum is like, what's its answer for maybe? What's its answer for, you know, I don't know yet, okay? Hasn't been determined yet. You can ask it that. Ask your pendulum that and see how it moves. Like for me, what I've noticed is sometimes it'll be like very little movement for maybe. It might be like you know, if my pendulum for a no moves in a vertical line up and down for a no answer, and I ask a question and it's kind of not quite determined yet, it might be just a little tiny movement up and down. So it's sort of like a maybe not, or maybe so. If it's tiny little circle, if it moves in a clockwise circle for a yes answer, you know. So, and some people it'll move on a diagonal when it hasn't been determined. So, you know, that's going to be the key to really being a successful dowser and really, you know, having a great relationship with your pendulum is spending some time in that sort of like relaxed state of mind and determining like what those movements are. Now, that's not the only way, right? You know, some people like to use dowsing boards, you know, or pendulum boards. And those are, I mean, look, you know, you could actually, you know, if you're, you know, I don't know how you feel about it. For some reason, it's a controversial subject, but you could actually use a pendulum with a Ouija board, Okay. So if you have a Ouija board laying around, instead of using the planchette, you could use a pendulum. Because if what does a Ouija board have on it? You know, it has all the letters, it has the numbers on it, it has yes, no, maybe, hello, goodbye kind of, you know, words on it, depending on, you know, what your Ouija looks like. And, you know, you could see, like, you know, ask it a question and see, does it point towards the yes or the no, or does it even spell out a word? Now, there is, you know, some products on the market that come with pendulum boards, which is kind of interesting. One of my favorites, because I just think it's so pretty, and I really like the Enchanted Couple. Amy Zerner and Monty Farber have a pendulum kit out there called the Enchanted Pendulum and Message Board. It's the Truth Fairy Pendulum Message Board Kit. And the thing that's really kind of outstanding about this particular kit that I really like about it is that it comes with, let me see, 12 different boards that you can use. Okay. And these are all for different types of questions, you know. And what they kind of look like, you know, with their kit in particular, and that this kind of ties into what I was talking about, different belief systems tied to pendulums. This particular kit is tied to the fairy realm, you know. And so these different boards are tied to that. So you have a board for the courage fairy, when you have to ask questions about things like, you know, will I find the courage to blank, blank, blank? I'm afraid, what should I do now? If I take this step, how will the project go? Am I weak to think blank, blank, blank? How should I proceed? Those kind of questions. And the board itself, you know, has a picture of the courage fairy at the center, and it has these words on the outside of the picture. Don't know, yes, maybe, no. And there's different words in the corners, stop, go, reverse, slow, those kind of things, you know. So this is similar to kind of a Ouija board, where the pendulum can be swinging towards a particular word or a particular area of the board. So that's another way to work with one. And if you do that, I mean, you can even design your own board to have the kind of, you know, answers that, you know, you are looking for, in a sense. And also, when you do that, you know, you don't want to make a board that's just, you know, everything you want to hear and nothing that you don't, because, you know, how is that going to be an interesting experience? It might be an interesting experiment to see if it works at all, you know. But, you know, ultimately you want to make it balanced, you know. It's like if you have a yes, you want to have a no. When I have a maybe, when I have a don't know, those kind of things. So, I mean, you could take a piece of paper and do that yourself, just like you could make a Ouija board that way yourself, you know. And so basically, you know, it is about yes, no questions. It is about things that, you know, you're not so physically attached to, emotionally attached to, that, you know, that's going to kind of, you know, affect your ability to douse objectively, because it is about dousing objectively. And once you have, you know, these directions, though, outside of using, you know, boards, once you have the movement of your pendulum determined, you know, then, you know, the sky's the limit, really. I know people that douse on their food. You know, I know people that douse on vitamins and supplements, where they will maybe go to a health store, you know, like, I guess, like a GNC or something, and they're considering taking, like, maybe a new iron supplement or something, and they'll have their pendulum and they'll pull it out, you know, and just, you know, is this going to be in best interest? Is this going to be useful for me? You know, so you want to ask those questions and always phrase them in that sort of yes, no, you know, so you can get a yes or no. And another thing that I actually, going back to this Truth Fairy Pendulum Kit by Monty Farber and Amy Zerner, that I really like about it is that it has a chamber in it. It comes with a pewter pendulum that has a chamber inside. And so that's kind of another interesting way to work with a pendulum, and they call it using a witness, right? So say you have a question about, somebody you just started dating. Well, you could write their name down on a piece of paper and put it in the chamber of the pendulum. So it's already in there, and you could ask, is this person, is it in my best interest to get to know this person better? Is this the one for me? Will this be a beneficial relationship? Those kind of things. Ask those kind of questions with a witness pendulum. You could write that down. Some people will actually take something like a vitamin or a supplement, and they will put it inside the chamber of a witness pendulum and ask, is this beneficial to my health? And note the movement that it makes and get their answer that way. There are people that douse over their food before they eat it when they go out to dinner, Now, look, sure, these people aren't everywhere, and maybe there's certain places where, most people wouldn't feel comfortable doing that, But, dousers are really kind of a wide variety and interesting, demographic, because they come from all walks of life, all cultures, so in all belief systems. So it's kind of a wonderful world to explore. And it's kind of great to have something so kind of small, simple, fits in your pocket, you can carry it around with you, kind of tool that you can kind of have on hand there. And plus, especially with crystal pendulums, they're so beautiful that it's great to have them around. And you want to also not forget the basics too. When I talked about relaxing before you work with one, some people think of that as grounding and centering, and some people like to get into what they call a state of joy or love, kind of a way that they feel like they are tapping into their intuitive self or their higher self. And the great thing about pendulums is that, it's something you can really fine tune, right? So say you start out with a broad question, and we'll do a love question because I get so many love questions, but somebody will say is it in my best interest to date so-and-so? And so, they use a pendulum or somebody, or maybe I douse for them and I get a yes. Okay. So the thing is about that, and one thing we have to keep in mind when we're asking any sort of questions, especially the yes, no ones, because it's like the answers are so brief, right? How I talked about how tarot can be a lot more nuanced than yes, no questions. And that's why it's not really good for yes or no questions. But, it might be in your best interest to date somebody. But what does that really mean? It might be in your best interest to date this person because of the lesson that you're going to learn about people, about yourself, about life, etc., about love. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be happy in that relationship. Okay, because ultimately, when we ask these sort of questions, we are really not necessarily understanding what we're asking, and it's not because we're stupid, it's because how in the world can we know how life is going to, the journey that life is going to take us on, right? And we all have painful experiences in life. We all have, things that we wouldn't choose to have happen in a million years that happen. And yet, there are benefits from it. It shapes us into the person we are, Maybe we become wiser. Maybe we become richer. Who knows? So what I like to do is what's called fine tuning. So I'll ask the first question, is it in my best interest to date so-and-so? Okay. So if I get a yes on that, then that's kind of like my green light to like, okay, let's ask some more about this. Let's fine tune this a little bit. You know, will I feel loved by this person? That's kind of important in a relationship that you're embarking on, to know if this person has the capacity to make you feel loved, you know. And then, you know, keep going. What other things would you want to know about that relationship? Will this person be generous? Will I have to support this person financially? Will this person support me emotionally? All those extra little questions. So don't stop with just that first yes, no, you know, and say like, oh, great. It's beneficial. It's wonderful. It's going to be a great relationship. You don't know that. You don't know that the answer was actually saying that. It just gave you a yes or no. So that's one thing that I would say is really important that oftentimes is overlooked by people that are just beginning to douse, is I think that they stop too soon. You know, they kind of like, they get the answer that they're hoping for, that they want, and then they're like, okay, great, I'm done. But I mean, ultimately, you know, if we're going to bother to, you know, learn a method of divination and to ask a question, we might as well make sure we get like the whole answer, right? So, you know, and that's just something to think about. So we're going to take a short pause for the cause here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this week's crystal guest, which are tektites, very interesting stones. So hold on, and we will be right back after these messages from our wonderful network.
Schedule your reading with one of the psychics at Attune, psychicsatattune.com. Have you always wanted to create your own tarot or oracle deck but thought you needed to be a graphic artist? Self-published decks are really hot right now, and I could show you how to do this. No Photoshop required. Contact me, Mary Nail, at marynail@attunemagazine.com.
www.theresarockforthat.com. Visit the website where there's a stone for that, an idea for that, a story about that, and even a reading with solutions for that, because, well, we just happen to rock like that. Need to relax? Or raise your vibration? Want to know how gems, crystals, and rocks can enhance your life? Get a crystal consultation. For entertainment purposes only, crystal consultations do not in any way replace treatment by licensed healthcare professionals. Come explore the wonders of the Crystal Kingdom at www.theresarockforthat.com.
Welcome to Attune Magazine Radio.
All right, we are back, and you are listening to There's a Rock for That on the Attune Magazine Radio Network. Okay, so now we are going to talk about this week's crystal guest, which is called tektite. And it's from the Greek word tektos, meaning molten. These are sort of gravel-sized bodies composed of black, green, brown, or gray natural glass formed from terrestrial debris ejected during extraterrestrial meteorite impacts. And they generally range in size from millimeters to centimeters. Millimeter-sized tektites, are the little tiny ones, are commonly called microtektites. And they're... It's kind of interesting. They're fairly, you know, extremely low in their water content. And they're very, you know, oftentimes their distribution is within a geographically extensive strewn field from where there's been an impact of a meteorite. And although tektites are, you know, similar to some obsidians, you know, volcanic glasses, they do have an unusual distinctive characteristic that distinguishes them from the volcanic glasses. First, they are completely glassy and lack any what they call phenocrysts, you know, unlike, you know, terrestrial volcanic glasses had. And secondly, although they're high in silica, the bulk chemical and isotopic composition of tektites is closer to that of sedimentary rocks and shales. So, and, you know, and there are a few tektites that contain partially melted inclusions of shocked or unshocked mineral grains like quartz or apatite, zircon, from, you know, that were shocked by the impact. And there's some interesting kind of, you know, different ideas on the origin of tektites. You know, first there's a, terrestrial source theory about it, that a lot of Earth and planetary scientists hold, is that tektites consist of terrestrial debris that was ejected during the formation of an impact crater. So, like, if you've ever been to, like, say, Meteor Crater in the U.S. here, you see the big impact crater, and you might find little pieces of little tektites, you know, there. There might still be some there, even though that's been kind of a tourist attraction for quite some time. But, you know, the idea with this is that during, I would say, extreme conditions, right, created by an extraterrestrial hypervelocity impact, the rocks on the Earth, you know, or the sediments there on the ground where it's hit, are either melted or they're vaporized or some combination of that, and then ejected from the impact crater. And then after ejection from the impact crater, the material forms into these little tiny molten material things that we end up calling tektites, which as they re-enter the atmosphere, because, you know, they're kind of thrown out of the atmosphere by the impact of the meteorite, they rapidly cool and form tektites when they fall back to Earth, and they create this sort of layer. They can be, you know, hundreds or thousands of kilometers away from the actual impact site, you know. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, support the idea that, you know, they are stones that are from the Earth and not extraterrestrial. It's the material that's been affected by the impact, ejected, and then re-entered the atmosphere. So there's that theory of it, you know. And the other thing that comes up is the kind of opposing theory that's non-terrestrial, that these are extraterrestrial stones, you know. You know, it's kind of controversial kind of thing. You know, this theory argues that tektites consist of material that was ejected from the moon or major hydrogen-driven lunar volcanic eruptions and then drifted through space to later fall to Earth. You know, one of the major proponents of the lunar origin theory of tektites is actually a NASA scientist, John A. O'Keefe, and also NASA aerodynamicist, Dean R. Chapman. And you know, some meteorite and tektite collectors, as well as researchers, also, you know, subscribe to, you know, the non-terrestrial or extraterrestrial origin, thinking that they are coming from lunar volcanic eruptions. So, you know, regardless of which theory of origin makes sense to you or is subscribed to when it comes to tektites, generally, you know, people do connect it to that idea of space or of extraterrestrials, because ultimately if a meteor didn't hit the ground, chances are we wouldn't have tektites, or as many as we do have. And the other thing being, you know, regardless, you know, if it's even coming from a volcanic eruption on the surface of the moon, and some people even argue, no, it's a volcanic eruption from Mars. So, you know, there's a lot of different theories, and basically what that tells us is we don't know. So these stones have some mystery to them, and they are connected to outer space. You know, moldavite is one that you may be familiar with, and we've featured moldavite on this show before. Moldavite is a tektite, and it's green. That's really, you know, how you, if you see green tektite, you know, that's what, that's moldavite, okay? And it's, they have really kind of interesting properties. Like I was saying, you know, the reason I thought about talking about tektites to begin with was because I got to have dinner with Renee Cummins when she was in town last weekend, and she was wearing a tektite on a necklace that she made. And you know, we talked about the fact that not a lot of people wear them or really, you know, say that they can handle the energy, you know. People that, you know, associate themselves more or feel more aligned with, let's say, the stars, okay, people that are really into astronomy, people that are interested in extraterrestrial life and origin theory, that kind of stuff, often are the ones that connect with tektites the most and can handle the energy beautifully, compared to other people that are like, whoa, this is too much for me to hold for very long, you know. But because of, you know, their connection to extraterrestrial origins in one way or the other, they're believed to enhance communication with other worlds and to encourage spiritual growth through absorption and retention of higher knowledge, knowledge that is coming kind of from off the planet. And this idea that, you know, tektite makes that connection really appeals to people that, that identify with the stars or even identify as star people. But, you know, for anyone, you know, tektites are a really interesting stone to encounter and to work with, you know. It's really kind of interesting. You know, some of the metaphysical associations with it is that it can provide encouragement to gather knowledge throughout one's travels of life, you know, that it can kind of, you know, hinder or suppress the kind of the lasting impression of a bad experience, that, you know, so it can help, like, you know, kind of tamp down, you know, negative experiences in that way, so they don't, you know, you're not so continue to be traumatized by them. It can encourage, at the same time, encourage lasting impressions of desirable experiences. So in a sense, you know, they enhance the well-being that way. It's like it downplays the negative and upplays the positive experiences that we have in life. But at the same time, allow you to remember the lessons, right? You know, it doesn't let you forget the lessons that you learn, regardless of, you know, what kind of experience that you have. And it can be a very balancing stone. It's said to act to balance the feminine and masculine properties of a person's character and to stimulate growth, the development, and completion, in a sense. In the Orient, or, you know, we look at, you know, Asian cultures, many of them use it as a talisman of great power. You know, even you don't have to go that far, even like Polynesian tribal elders believe the tektites would bring wealth and fertility in all endeavors. You know, because it's unusual, right? You know, and usually when a stone, you know, has a connection to extraterrestrial origins like that, it is considered a very powerful either talisman or amulet. It's very interesting. If you know, when we talk about healing using tektites, it's a very interesting thing. And now, of course, when I talk about healing, I do mean, you know, if you feel you have a serious, you know, medical condition, or you suspect that, you know, something's wrong with you, I definitely highly recommend that you seek out the appropriate licensed medical professional and get a proper diagnosis, and then use and work with crystals to enhance your healing journey. That being said, you know, if you take a tektite and place it on any of the chakras, it can balance the energy flow and may reverse a chakra that is spinning the wrong way. Okay, that's something to think about. We don't talk about that a lot, actually, chakras spinning in the wrong direction. And times when that's the case, you can detect that, because it's like the opposite of what you want happening is happening. You know, you blurt out the exact opposite of how you feel. You know, if it's the throat chakra spinning the wrong way, you know, the things that come out of your mouth that you can't seem to control, you know, it's like the chakra's open and you're expressing, but you're kind of doing, it's going in the wrong direction. So that's one way to tell. And that would be true for, you know, for any of the qualities of any of the chakras. You know, if you find that they're expressing in an opposite manner, chances are that they're spinning in the wrong direction, but they are open, and placing a tektite in that area might very well correct that. And they're said to also be very helpful when it comes to enhancing telepathy and clairvoyance, and that is done by placing the tektite on the third eye. And also, you know, the same with communicating with other dimensions. Now, the thing that's kind of interesting is tektites are said to strengthen the biomagnetic sheath that's around the body. So like your energy body, this biomagnetic kind of shield or sheath that is around the body, this is said to kind of strengthen that. And that can be very helpful to know if you know, it's kind of funny, but you know, if you feel like you're being drained, if you feel like you have what they call leaky aura syndrome, or you feel like your energy is just kind of slipping away from you, or things are kind of coming in that you don't want to let come in, basically. If you feel like in situations or people are affecting you way too much, it's almost like, you know, you might need to strengthen that kind of sheath around the body, so that doesn't happen so much and things can kind of bounce off a little bit more. And traditionally, tektites have been worn as talismans for fertility. And, you know, another thing when it comes to healing is that they have been said to help reduce fevers, aid the capillaries and circulation, and prevent the transmission of diseases. And that certain types of tektites have been used for psychic surgery. That's kind of an interesting thing. So they're thought to be very powerful. Now, of course, you know, with any unusual powerful stone, you know, we have the strange, you know, kind of myths and legends and things about them, you know. And part of that has to do, you know, well, look, you know, part of it has to do with the mystery of the origins of it, but ultimately in the idea that it's from outer space. And what I find is that a lot of times, you know, I bring this up because I find that, you know, a lot of people, you know, seem to develop these sort of fears when it comes to working with them or holding it or touching it, you know? And I would say, like, don't don't be afraid. You know, it's not going to hurt you, you know, it's not going to do anything to you, you know, and don't swallow it or put it in your mouth, or I wouldn't even make an elixir with it using the direct method, you know. I might do it using the indirect method. You know, I haven't really seen anybody really using elixirs with tektites, so that might be something that's kind of an interesting area to explore. But, you know, you gotta, you know, be smart, but don't be afraid of it just because it's sort of different, you know. And other people, you know, there's fears and superstitions about it that have developed from people thinking, and I this is really interesting, people thinking of, you know, a meteorite hitting the earth, impacting the earth as being a very violent event. And when you think that there's, you know, probably millions of meteorites that have hit the Earth since the Earth's existence, you know, it's maybe not as unusual as we make it out to be, you know. And it's interesting, you know, some of the folklore around it, especially, you know, the green kind of tektite, moldavite, you know, has been linked to a lot of different mystical objects where people have said, like, oh, well, that's moldavite that's made out of, or that's a tektite it's made out of, including the Holy Grail, you know. So it's definitely taken on a lot of, you know, mystery to it. And it's hard, you know, we can't really say like that the holy, you know, unless you find the Holy Grail, you know, give me a call if you do. But, you know, we can't really say for sure that that is made out of pectite, or the same with the Kaaba, the Stone Kaaba in Mecca. You know, we can't say that that's necessarily tectite either, because that is historically a stone thought to have fallen to the earth, you know. So people will say, well, that's a tectite, or that may actually be a meteorite, a piece of meteorite. Who knows? You know, that's been carved. I'm going to leave that, you know, as being a mystery. You know, but the thing that's really interesting about tectites, you know, is that besides, you know, maybe using them, you know, for the treatment of fevers or something like that, you know, to make sure you don't pick up any sort of viruses, you know, during flu season or something, is that, you know, this idea, going back to this idea of balance with it. Because I always found it like a little bit ironic that, you know, they're really great for balancing your energy and balancing the yin yang and the male female energies, and at the same time to think of something that is got an extraterrestrial connection to it seems sort of unbalanced, you know. And I think the way to look at it, the way I kind of look at it, is the sense that, you know, so often we are so earthbound. So often we are just thinking about our earthly lives, our earthly concerns, our everyday thing connected to this planet. And we don't consider very often, I don't think we do on it, we don't walk around in the world. We might think about it, you know, if there's a news story about something in space, you know. We don't think about the fact that we're part of a galaxy. We don't think about the fact that we're part of a solar system. We don't think about the fact that we are connected to that moon that we see above at night, and that sun we see above during the day. So to me, it's really an easy way to dispel the fear to think of it as not so much an extraterrestrial stone, but actually a universal element. A universal stone, something that's part of the cosmos that we're part of. You know, I feel like that's there's a key in there to connecting with tectites, is to not putting them, you know, so far above us like they have been for centuries, where it's like, oh, that's mysterious, it's weird, it's from outer space. You know, it's like we may very well be from outer space. We may very well be made of stardust. You know, so it's like a kin of ours. You know, it's a stone people. You know, tectite is a stone person, and that energy is not so foreign. We're connected to it. So, you know, if you choose to work with tectites, I think it's helpful to keep in mind that it's not so strange. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's not so fearful. They are unusual looking, and they do feel unusual as well, you know? Like, I've got, you know, since we were talking about pendulums today, one of my favorite pendulums, I don't know if you can see that slideshow that wasn't working, Blog Talk, but I have a turquoise pendulum, you know, it has a big piece of turquoise at the bottom of it. But on the sort of the top part of it, you know, a piece of tectite is on there. And I love, actually, that was another reason I wanted to talk about it during my pendulum episode, is that idea once again of balance. So what's really important with a weight on a string or a pendulum is, does hang straight and still when you're not asking it a question. And if you have a stone on it, like a little piece of tectite on it at the top, that's going to help balance it as well, so that you get a balanced answer. So, and what I mean by balanced is, you know, objective, you know. So already it's not going to be, you know, inclined to always give one sort of sense of one sort of kind of answer, or to swing in a certain direction. So So that's something to think about, you know, is that idea of balance with tektite, that they might be, if you're making your own pendulum, you know, it might be interesting to maybe, you know, have a little piece of tektite on the end that you can hold it with, you know, between your thumb and your forefinger, or however you want to hold it. And that will help also you have a sense of confidence that, okay, you know, I'm ready to do this, and I've got a pendulum that is going to, you know, it's not already biased, basically, you know. And that's not, you know, that I've heard that. It's kind of funny. I feel like in a sense, and maybe it's because it's October, I feel like in a sense this is a superstitious show, because there's so many superstitions about tektites. There's a lot of superstitions about pendulums and dowsing as well. I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, something, you know, but it was something else controlling the pendulum. And, you know, as we discussed when we were talking about those, you know, scientific experiments that have been conducted by PhDs from Stanford and et cetera, you know, it's not so spooky. It's not so out there, you know. It makes sense that it works, you know. Muscle contraction is part of it. And it's really okay to accept that is when we're dousing. You know, it's a half second difference, you know, between when your muscle contracts and the pendulum actually moves. So, you know, I don't know a lot of people that can plan a lot of stuff or intentionally do a lot of stuff in a half second amount of time. You know, so right there, I think should be another way to give you some confidence. I think maybe adding a tektite to the top of your pendulum, maybe holding on to it, tying it to the string at the top, to give you kind of a little handle there, might be another way to encourage confidence, because that's really kind of the key to it. We need to be confident in what we're doing and in our intuition and in our ability to determine the answers and in our ability to work with crystals, you know. And that doesn't mean that, you know, just because we, you know, think so it will be. I don't think it means that at all. I think what it means is that we're not racked with self-doubt. We are able to listen to our intuition and to be open to it. And the biggest part of that, you know, whether it's working with, you know, say you work with a tektite and say you start channeling, you know, because it does help with intuition and you know, our clair abilities, clair. Say you start feeling like you know, you're holding a tektite, maybe you're sitting there meditating with it, and you start channeling, you know, you start getting like a message or symbols, pictures in your head or words in your ear, clairaudience, however it works, that you feel like, you know, this is very different. These are strange messages. This, I haven't heard things like this before. This is coming from somewhere else. Maybe it is coming from, you know, an extraterrestrial source, maybe, you know, and that's okay. You know, it doesn't, you know, you're not going to get abducted working with tektite. Somebody actually asked me that question. You know, do you think that if you work with things, you know, connected to space like tektites or moldavite, do you think that, you know, that's a way of like kind of you're calling the aliens to you? And at least in my experience thus far, no, I don't think that. That hasn't happened. And strangely, I have not had a fear of that happening either. So I would encourage that you don't either. We don't kind of put the cart before the horse, you know. If you do feel like you have contact with spacey kind of energy, extraterrestrial kind of energy, then, you know, write down the experience and test out the message that's given to you. You know, and I think that that's true no matter what. Any time that, you know, we get answers, and same thing for dowsing, you know, our yes, no answers. The great thing is if we ask questions about things that, you know, are going to happen, then we can see if we've kept track of what the answers were. If we journal it, I always recommend journaling when we work with crystals and also when we do dowsing. You know, keep track of the questions that you ask and the answers that you're given, because two reasons for that. One, it helps you determine, like, okay, what's the accuracy of this? What's the accuracy? You know, how many of these things that I got a yes on ended up being a yes in as they played out in life? You know, how many things that I got a no on ended up happening anyway? What did I mean? You know, and how did I ask the question? Because always, and there's this old saying that once you have a question in your mind, your heart already knows the answer. That might be tied to dowsing, and that might be tied to working with crystals. And maybe working with crystals sometimes, you know, it allows that answer that we have inside us already to bubble up more, to come more to the forefront. Maybe the type of crystal that we work with kind of affects the kind of tone that the answer takes, you know. So those are, you know, some more aspects of all of this to kind of consider as well. But, you know, I think it's so important that once you start asking really good questions, then you're going to see accuracy rate improve with dowsing or whatever kind of divination that you're using. You know, if you think of it in terms of, like, it's always starting with the question, how we're phrasing the question, and then allowing the tool, the pendulum, or the cards, whatever you're using, to answer back to that specific question. You know, I think that makes a big difference. And, you know, the best way to do that, because, I mean, unless you've got, you know, a lot of extra room in your brain to remember everything that you ever ask when you're dowsing, you are going to want to write it down. And write it down exactly the way that you ask the question. And, you know, you can ask the question out loud. You can ask the question in your mind to yourself. You can write it down on a piece of paper. And if you have a witness pendulum, like in the Truth Fairy kit, you could put that question down and put it inside the chamber. But keep track of it, because then, you know, that's how you learn to ask better questions, you know, more specific questions, because oftentimes we phrase a question in a way that is not really designed to give us the answer to what we really want to know. So, all right, those are just some added little things that I wanted to mention here for you to think about. And I think that is pretty much it for the show today. I am going to have to go back and edit it to get up those when I... Blog Talk kept dropping me those moments, so definitely I will do that. But in the meantime, I want you all to feel free, without fear, to explore dowsing, to get yourself a pendulum if you don't have one already, or if you have one you haven't used, you know, to start working with it. Spend some time with it. At least determine the movement for the yes, no to your pendulum, and the maybe or don't know yet answers to it, so it'll become, you know, it can become like your best friend. You know, you might end up carrying it around all the time. And that's another thing that you can do if you're so inclined when it comes to wanting to connect, you know, with your pendulum or with a crystal, you know, of any type. You might try carrying it around with you in your pocket, or sleeping with it under your pillow or in your pillowcase. And something tells me that if you went to sleep at night with a Tektite under your pillow, one, you might get a really good night's sleep, and two, you might wake up with some really interesting thoughts in your head. So, I will leave you with that. And until next week, next Thursday, here at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, like we are every Thursday here on the Attune Magazine Radio Network on There's a Rock for That. I wish you all an absolutely lovely weekend and rest of your week, and have fun and explore, and don't be afraid of things. There's no. All right. See you next week, everybody. Bright blessings to all. Bye-bye.